such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning into The Winds of Change. If you're here on a Wednesday afternoon or you're listening on the podcast through Podbean, God bless you for tuning in. This is Father Tom Coy's brain-wrinkling pastor, shepherd, think tank leader.
I am the gift.
And this show is a gift. An hour of intellectual brain wrinkling and enlightening. I hope there's also not only brain wrinkling, but enlightening, where you might see something that you haven't seen before, right? That's what it's all about. Anyways, I'm going to start the show by considering asking you to think about branding, right? Name branding. Some of you may have that as part of your professional career. We think about brand names in clothes, right? But every company kind of has a brand that you're trying to build up, promote, protect. And you don't like it when your brand is sort of maligned, right? That's it's a bad business practice. If you were to sew some jeans out of poor cotton, or with bad thread, and you said, "Oh, buy these Levi jeans," then you'd be maligning the name Levi, right? Anyways, the reason I bring that up is because there's a branding issue going on in the church that we have to talk about this because it touches on significant aspect of our faith, a significant reason why there's this difficulty in getting on the same page, as it were, within the church about some very significant and important issues. The brand that I'm talking about comes from an academic institute in Rome that was set up under Pope John Paul II, and it's called the John Paul II Pontifical Institute for Studies on Marriage and the Family. It's a mouthful, isn't it? The John Paul II Pontifical Institute for Studies on Marriage and the Family. There's a movement afoot that is saying that name really has to be dropped. And let's analyze this little issue going on. It's a little issue about a little institute on the other side of the world for most of us, but it truly touches on a significant issue that touches all of our lives, no matter what part of the world you live on. And how are we supposed to approach ethics and the idea of what's right and wrong regarding sexual ethics, especially? Because obviously, if you're going to discuss theology in marriage, you're going to touch on sexual ethics, correct? Correct. Anyways, back in 1981, Pope John Paul II asked a very strong and holy Cardinal Carlo Caffara, to help start a academic institution on the study of marriage and family. And therefore, oh, just a minute. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was coming through my my microphone. But I'm just going to have to tell you, if you hear that, you might have heard that noise a little bit. We're having lightning rods put on the roof of our house here, and I'm on the second floor, so he's right above me, and he may be putting screws into the roof and what have you. We might hear that noise a little bit, but don't let it bother you. Don't let it wrinkle your brain, because there's other brain wrinkling ideas to come. Anyways, so they started this institute because obviously you have to be living under a rock or just unconcerned with living like a fish underwater somewhere, somehow. And it has, obviously, there's so much controversy. And some people just outright denied, outright ignored, that what the Catholic Church has tried to do for society, especially for marriage and family life, and trying to get people away from the, shall we say, normal aspect of the worldly way of regulating birth, obviously, namely artificial contraception, and helping to promote natural family planning, to see how the practice of using artificial contraception not only offends God as the creator of a beautifully designed world, a beautifully designed body of man and woman, and it develops and it brings about many sad consequences that we are seeing front and center, my friends. Anyways, so it's a significant issue for all of us. But let's focus on a little bit of this name change that those who were a part of the Institute are calling for, because they're saying like they worked for Coca-Cola and someone slipped in a brand name cola that doesn't at all fit Coca-Cola. So this is what the story is. Since the early 1980s, since John Paul, I'm sorry, this darn noise is driving me crazy. I hope it doesn't drive you crazy. Since Pope Francis became Pope, many changes have taken place in that institute.
Wow. So, you just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, the staff that was built up under John Paul II have almost completely been fired and removed. And the new senior and lower-level faculty members of this institute are openly contradicting what John Paul II taught, and not only what John Paul the Pope taught, but he was trying to clarify what Catholicism taught. In other words, it's not just John Paul II's teaching, it's Catholicism's teaching. So they're saying this name needs to be changed. Pope Francis published his apostolic letter, Summa Familiae Cura, and he issued a motu proprio, kind of like an executive order for just to put it in the context of American politics, that changed the name to Pontifical John Paul II Theological Institute for Marriage and Family Sciences. Okay, not a big change. It was John Paul II Pontifical Institute for Studies on Marriage and the Family, and Pope Francis changed it to Pontifical John Paul II Theological Institute for Marriage and Family Sciences. And he did that just 13 days after Cardinal Caffara, the Archbishop of Bologna, died in 2017. So from that point on, the apostolic letter stated the refounded body would carry forward the work of the 2014 and 2015 synods on the family that Francis initiated, and the 2016 apostolic exhortation that came from those meetings. Also, Amoris Laetitia, when Pope Francis, I got to ask this worker to pause for a little while. Maybe in a break, I could ask him to do that. It's driving me crazy. I'm sorry. That Amoris Laetitia, a document notable for admitting any references to John Paul II's encyclical on moral theology called Veritatis Splendor. So Cardinal Caffara's connection with the timing of the Institute's refounding was not incidental. He, along with Cardinal Walter Brandmuller, Cardinal Raymond Burke, and Cardinal Joachim Meisner, had sent five questions, what were called the dubia. That's a technical term for an intervention when the church is trying to decide an important matter, and it's part of committee work, and you bring up some questions that need to be addressed. So they brought those questions, those dubia, up to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. That was in the fall of 2016. In a bid to clear up, quote-unquote, grave disorientation and great confusion, which they said Amoris Laetitia had caused. So to this day, the Pope has neither formally replied to the dubia nor even offered any audiences to the cardinals to discuss the issue, and left two of the four, Cardinal Caffara and Cardinal Meisner. They passed away both in 2017 before they were able to meet with Pope Francis. So instead, this pontificate has forged ahead to dismantle the institution that, like Veritatis Splendor, was meant to serve as a bulwark against dissent from Paul VI's 1968 encyclical, Humanae Vitae. That's the famous encyclical that told us that God doesn't want us using artificial contraception to regulate birth. There's a much more beautiful, natural way that involves self-discipline instead of popping a pill or all the other kinds of artificial methods. So instead, the reform of the institution to make it coincide with more closely with the ideals set forth in Amoris Laetitia. So unfortunately, the ideas or the ideals set forth in Amoris Laetitia are very ambiguous. So to say you're going to set up something so that Amoris Laetitia would be more clearly taught, first you have to know what it is clearly teaching, which is a little difficult. So founded as an integral part of Rome's Pontifical Lateran University, the Institute was the fruit of the 1980 Synod on the Family and his apostolic constitution on that synod, Familiaris Consortio, on the role of the Christian family in the modern world. John Paul wanted the Pontifical Institute because he was convinced that defense and promotion of marriage and the family would be one of the most important elements of the church's mission in the third millennium. And I couldn't agree more with that assessment. It's just part, it's an issue that just won't go away. Those who want it to go away, those who don't address it, are part of the problem, really, in a very real sense, because God offers a beautiful, reasonable, sometimes difficult, undoubtedly sometimes difficult, but what good thing doesn't carry with it a certain kind of challenge? And the fact that it is so easily overlooked, in my book, explains the fact why things are getting worse and worse in terms of moral principles and in terms of strange new horizons that that human sexuality has gotten to today.
Wow.
If the problems were easy to see.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
If the problems were easy to see, then we'd be able to fix the problems. But since the problem is not easy to see, light has to be brought to bear on that. It's like a doctor. You can go to a doctor with a health problem, and if it's pretty easy to see, and there's medicine and there's treatment available, bingo, you're in good shape. But when you keep going to the doctor, and the doctor says, I don't know what's wrong with you, But you're still feeling worse and worse. You start saying to yourself, why am I feeling bad? Why are things so bad? And the doctor keeps saying, I don't know. You get a second, a third, fourth opinion. And one doctor says, well, it might be this. And then you investigate it, and it turns out to be right. So, Nick, why don't we take a quick little break here? I'm going to try to see if I can get my worker to be quiet here for a little while. But let's take a quick break. You are listening to Listener Supported. This is Father Tom Coyes. You are listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Koska Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560.
773-278-4560. And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Koska is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Koska is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for being with me. I asked my worker to take a little lunch break here. I don't know if that was disturbing you as much as it was disturbing me. Anyways, I want to put this issue, the issue of the need to change the name to the Pontifical John Paul II Institute for study of marriage and life sciences. Isn't that? I guess. If you put the word science in a title, you're gonna get more people to genuflect in front of it. Although the science that bends reason isn't the best kind of science. Are we agree with that? That's what I'm saying. And of course, this whole issue has been a sticky thing for almost two generations now, right?
And my Lord. Such destruction.
I want you, my listeners, and all those who see and sense difficulties within society and in the church to realize this is a kernel, this is a root, this is a it's a stone in the shoe that we have to exercise and do so with love, patience, understanding, and wise thinking. I want to put this moral issue in the context of something. How should I say this? We just had the Feast of St. James, right? Last Sunday. I'm recording this on the Wednesday after the Feast of St. James, which is July 25th. July 25th this year was a Sunday. Anyways, since I'm at St. James the Church, I felt it my obligation to share some important thoughts about St. James. But they are not just for people who go to a church called St. James. Anyways, St. James is famous for a number of things, but I wanted to let you know what is top of the list of why he should be regarded highly among the apostles. Of course, he was there were two James, James the Lesser and James the Greater. And so there's a letter, there's an epistle of St. James. And I'm pretty sure, though I have to do a little more research on it, I'm pretty sure the letter in the Bible is from St. James the Greater. Anyways, it's the letter of St. James. And St. James the Greater was the brother of John, John the Evangelist. So John the Evangelist was the one who wrote the last book of the Bible, right? Book of Revelations, as well as the Gospel of John, both of which are very, shall we say, highfalutin theology with beautiful, almost poetic, or you could say poetic language wrapped in his theology. Of course, the vivid images of the dream he had in the last book of the Bible, Book of Revelations, is there by John. So anyways, they call it high theology, right? James, his brother, I think had a more practical mind, a more down to earth. So he's the apostle who wrote the epistle that promoted what was called what the term called works. He used the word works. In other words, good deeds. When you have faith in God, you believe in his majesty, you believe in his authority, you believe in his existence, all these wonderful things that happen, shall we say, in our minds, right, in our heart. We're convicted of certain beliefs, but the world of deeds, the world of actions, is of a different kind of reality. You could just say that it's morality. It's principles of morality, not principles of doctrines about God or his nature and all that. So, anyways, St. James, he's the one who introduces the word works. In other words, and remember what he said: if you show me your faith without works, your faith will be shown to be empty. I'll show you my faith with works. And that's true faith. So he showed that you can't separate the idea of a morally good life from a faithful believer. And that's at the heart and soul of the divisions between Catholics and Protestant theologians, basically, because Martin Luther was the one who said works or good deeds are useless, and it's we are saved by faith alone, the famous phrase that he comes up with, of course. So Martin Luther called the epistle of St. James the epistle of straw, right? The epistle of straw, which means good for nothing except to be burned. And in doing so, he's doing what's going on today in many minds, in many parts of the world, even in many parts of the church, Protestant churches and Catholic churches alike, and that is an acceptance of moral relativity such that only your relationship or belief, relationship with God or belief in God is matters. So anyways, the thing that this relates to, I must say, is remember we had the gospel of the multiplications of the loaves and fishes, right, last Sunday, and it made me realize an angle about what faith truly is, because if the Lord when he multiplied the loaves and the fishes, remember the people wanted to carry him off and make him king. Remember, that's how the story ends. And that's always a little bit of a puzzle, right? Well, why wouldn't he have wanted to have been king? You could say, well, that he didn't want to be political. Well, why didn't he want to be political? That sort of just begs the question. You could say he knew that he couldn't be king in the sense of being the administrator of those practical matters that us human beings have to deal with that considers the health of the body, right? Good housing, good food, all those things that take care of our physical existence. And those are very much under the authority of civil government. And so Jesus, when he multiplied the loaves, he didn't want the people to carry him off and be king, because he knew that that kind of work was going to be and always has been and is and always will be the kind of work that he wants his followers to be involved in. In other words, this thought wrinkled my brain when I realized if the Lord would have let the people make him king, then the people would have, of course, waited on the Lord to make all these miracles so that they could have a better physical life, existence. And so a person of great faith would be the person who is waiting for the Lord's miracles. And we know that's not the case, right? Just waiting for miracles isn't a sign of great faith. Now, people who deny miracles obviously don't show that they have much faith at all, I suppose you could say. Believing that miracles can happen and we should pray for miracles to happen is a sign of faith, but just waiting for miracles without exercising our natural ability to do something for the physical world, for the physical life that we have, that's kind of a sign of a lack of faith. The one who just sits around and waits for the miracle, right? And so I just kind of had a new appreciation for a definition of faith in meditating on the end of that gospel. The Lord didn't want to be made king because he knew there was going, if he were just to make miracles for the rest of human history, then human beings would not work very much toward the betterment of human society. And the Lord definitely wants people to work for the betterment of human society. So that kind of pushes the believer to be politically involved, right? We shouldn't shy away from that. So that's somewhat dovetailed into a point that I also made in terms of what Pope Francis was saying about the motu proprio of the new regulations about the TLM, the traditional Latin Mass. The Pope was saying that he was criticizing the TLM Mass itself and the people who like the TLM Mass. One of his main criticisms was the fact that having this Mass was very divisive. It's dividing the church. And I want us all to think together and realize that the different rituals is not the deepest cause of the divisions in our church today or within society today. We as Americans especially, I think, are kind of okay with different kinds of rituals, right? Someone who goes to the Novus Ordo Mass, they know somebody who goes to the TLM. If they're on the same page theologically and especially morally, there's a great unity. And so what I think we should all be appreciative of today is that the moral issues are more specifically the cause of division in the church today than a few different rites of the church, namely the Novus Ordo and or the Tridentine. Put it in the context of your family life. Let us say you're a businessman, and you're dealing with another businessman, and morally speaking, he's on a much different page than you are. You try to be a businessman who doesn't lie, who doesn't cheat, doesn't tip the scales, doesn't sell false products or put too much water in the soup, so to speak. And you're competing with another businessman who believes in all those and doesn't hold to such strict moral codes, as it were. You know that is a cause of division between the two of you. If you're both on the same page in terms of moral issues, and yet there's some different style issues, you're not going to be as divided as if you had different moral principles. Or going back to the Civil War, let's imagine the Civil War. That was one of the main gripes of the Northern businessmen. Even though, when you think back in that time of the history of the United States, I always learned from little on in grade school, as soon as I started hearing there was such a thing as the Civil War, that the Northern states were more industrialized and the Southern states were agricultural, right? Of course, there were farms in the North and there was some industry in the South. But the fact that just looking at in a business way, if you are either in industry or farming, and some business owners are able to use slaves to make their business soar, successful, big and profitable, but another group of business owners has the morals to say, no, we can't enslave people for that kind of work. That's divisive. That divided our country so much more than the fact that in the South they liked lemonade and in the North they liked root beer. Or in the South they liked Dixie music and in the North they liked other kind of music. I'm painting with the idea just different cultural matters, right? It wasn't the different styles of culture that caused the Civil War. It was this great moral principle at the heart and soul of things. So that's why I think this issue of Humanae Vitae and Pope John Paul II's attempt to make it reasonable, to make it understandable, to make it beautiful, and the people under Pope Francis's efforts to dismantle that, to say, let's forget about trying to live according to that encyclical, let's just call it a...
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's what so many of these theologians are saying under Pope Francis's pontificate. They're just saying, let's chuck Humanae Vitae and let's just start saying that artificial contraception is not only a good thing, but it's a necessary thing. That, my friends, is at the heart of so many problems. If you could just open your eyes to see how one thing leads to another, right? Anyways, I want to get back to this controversy here, but we'll take another break, okay, Nick? We'll follow this story about what's going on in Rome, and let's pray that you and I can be a force for the beautiful rendering, the beautiful rendering of what Catholicism truly is, when so many others are denying it or attacking it, right? Anyways, I'm Father Tom Coyes, your Wednesday afternoon brain wrinkler. You are listening to, this is WNDZ. This is listener supported, The Winds of Change.
St. Stan's needs your help. We are forming a group of volunteers called St. Stan's Cares to help parish and school families in times of need. To join the group or learn more, please contact Brian at 312-343-3222, and we will plan an upcoming virtual meeting to discuss the details. Almsgiving, it's one of the three pillars of Lent. Volunteer with St. Stan's Cares as a means of almsgiving.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyce here on a brain wrinkling Wednesday. Once again, I'm trying to help people understand moral theology, as I so often do on these Wednesdays. It is an area of great brain wrinkling. And I'm going to start after this break. I got a little comic relief here because I'll say it this way. When the principles, the beautiful Catholic principles of Humana Vitae are shattered, which this new institute is certainly doing, strange aberrations have grown up, have spread. One of them is the issue of the military today. I got to share with you one of my favorite podcasts. It's a channel called Freedom Tunes. It's designed and run by a Chicagoan here. By the name of Seamus Coughlin. Some of you might know the Coughlin family, a wonderful family here in the Chicagoland area. Here's a recent episode of Freedom Tunes discussing the issue of how the military today under Joe Biden is trying to push the issues of social engineering within the military, the more crazy developments of moral theology, or moral philosophy, I guess you could say. Anyways, but here's a little comic relief. It's only a minute or so, so I think we could take this in here today. Let's see.
The Pentagon is attempting to encourage young women to consider a military career with the controversial new Bring Your Daughter to War Day.
Die, die, die!
And if that isn't bad enough, Joe Biden is considering banning everyone who isn't a pregnant woman from serving in the military. Here with us to discuss these new policies, we have the president's advisor from the Pentagon.
Tucker, pregnant women are the most dangerous force on the planet. This is footage we received from Afghanistan. 6 hours after deploying a unit of pregnant women.
Cartoon.
They won't tell me what they're mad about! We surrender! It's over! We surrender! Leave us alone!
In fact,
since we've announced the pregnant women-only military, nearly all of our adversaries have surrendered.
Nobody's denying that pregnant women are the most dangerous force on the planet. But there was a time in this country when men would fight wars because they had the decency to want to protect the rest of the world from what they knew their pregnant wives would do if they were the ones fighting.
Those days are over, Tucker.
Hey! You're the man who said pregnant women can't fight wars!
No. First of all, that's not exactly what... Oh, stop it. Ow! No!
No!
That's Freedom Tunes. Way to go, Seamus. It's So it's worth it. You got to subscribe to Freedom Tunes and just check out some of those humorous antidotes about what's going on in society today. Anyways, back to the world of Catholicism and the theological and sticky issues of moral theology and this controversy regarding the naming, the name of an institute. It's not only just controversy over the name of an institute, it's also the abandoning of a direction that the church was definitely going in. And we have to see that it's taking a turn now. A lot of people are going to applaud this turn under Pope Francis. A lot of people are going to say, I've thought Humanae Vitae was wrong ever since the 1960s. I've used artificial contraception just fine. And therefore, I support the Pontifical Institute for trying to update Catholic teaching on this matter. And all those Catholic theologians who are trying to defend the teachings of Humanae Vitae, go jump in a lake somewhere. That's kind of what's going on here, my friends. And we have to appreciate that getting it wrong is has long-term consequences. It might seem like a small thing. It might seem, why bother with such a silly thing? But again, it reminds me of another philosophical principle that a wrong move at the beginning of a long journey creates great problems. In other words, you know, if you're going to take a long journey and you take one turn wrong at the beginning, you're going to have a hard time reaching your goal. What that means is the teachings of Humanae Vitae may be subtle. They might seem small, but if you get it wrong, that area of human life, that area of marriage and family life, of romance and all the rest, you get something small wrong like that, which is at the origins of so much of our moral thinking, and then You get more things wrong till you get a society that we're seeing today. So here, this article, I'm quoting from an article from the Register, National Catholic Register. It's by Edward Penton. Edward Penton in the Register. And so I just got to keep going here a little bit more. I could see how... what happened was in 2016, Archbishop Paglia, who had faced criticism also for his leadership in the Pontifical Academy for Life. In other words, he was part of the Pontifical Academy for Life, but yet was not that strong of a pro-lifer, sad to say. He's the one who was the head of the Institute, and he appoints a guy by the name of Nigel Begar, who is a theologian who wrote many articles justifying abortion. He's part of the Pontifical Academy for the Life, and he also voiced support for changing the catechism's teaching on homosexuality. And he was then appointed the Grand Chancellor of the Institute formerly known as the Pope John Paul II Institute on Family Life. So anyways, the change of the Institute's name in 2017 sounded an alarm. A guy by the name of Stanislav Grigel, one of the Institute's original founding professors, and he was a friend of Pope John Paul II's, he told the National Catholic Register just back in June, immediately after the founding of the new institute, during a meeting of professors and academic authorities, I asked to remove the name of the John Paul II, from the title of the institute, but he was ignored. Again, so this is kind of shifts in one level to an issue of branding. It's kind of without changing the name, the Institute is trying to say that John Paul II really didn't support Humanae Vitae, really did see there was sort of value or intellectual integrity in the right to abortion, these kinds of things. So it's kind of sad. We can't just expect that a Catholic school is foundationally Catholic. There are a lot of institutions that carry the name Catholic that don't usually verbalize it, but it's usually under the surface of sorts. Namely, there's this dissent against Humanae Vitae. If you feel brave, if you feel strong enough, if you feel like advancing the spirit of God, the true Catholicism, ask those people who work at Catholic institutions, especially schools, how they come down on Humanae Vitae. A lot of people will may give lip service. A lot of people won't know what it is. But those who do know what it is, those who do support it, those who try to promote it, will definitely be in the minority. I've said a number of times, for the people today, in the 60s, a great number of Catholics resisted. They just were against Humanae Vitae. And then a generation came along that were sort of unsure about it. And then a third generation came along, and they just don't even know what it is, don't know what it means at all. And that's because of the lack of teaching on the part of many Catholic institutions, right? So anyways, Nick, I think we can get in our last break here before we try to wrap up another brain-wrinkling hour of the winds of change. Let's take another little break. I am Father Tom Coyce. You are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stan's needs your help. We are forming a group of volunteers called St. Stan's Cares to help parish and school families in times of need. To join the group or learn more, please contact Brian at 312-343-3222, and we will plan an upcoming virtual meeting to discuss the details. Almsgiving, it's one of the three pillars of Lent. Volunteer with St. Stan's Cares as a means of almsgiving.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyce here. I'm sharing with you a very little talked about issue going on in the church, a controversy. It's little known or little talked about on the one hand, but it's got universal, wide-ranging implications because it touches on that very sticky issue of artificial birth control. It's just something we don't want to talk about. We avoid, even in Catholic institutions, even with Catholic churches. I've been in many, outreach programs, workshops, and it's almost the forbidden topic. You should not at all talk about that. And usually people will say something like, well, you don't come at people who, if somebody's not going to church, you don't start talking to them about artificial birth control. And I completely agree. That's not your opening line. But the problem we have is that it's the proverbial kick the can down the road. Most of the time, you say, "Okay, it's not your first approach to people that don't go to church." So is it the second? No, it's not the second. You got to warm them up more, better this way. Is it the third? No. What I found as a priest trying to get people back into church or what have you, especially working with different kind of evangelical outreach programs, is that that it's never the correct time to approach this issue. It's often said this is not the right time, and I could easily agree. Okay, fine, you're right, but to say that it's never the right time, or we're not told when it's the right time, or oftentimes bishops will say they're a little upset with some of their priests if they make this issue too front and center, or they're preaching and they're not doing it right. They're not preaching about humanity vitae correctly, but none of the bishops are modeling how to do it correctly. You know what I'm saying? Doing it perhaps not perfectly is better than not doing it at all. That is, trying to help people understand this great, beautiful teaching and the great far-reaching consequences that following this teaching will have for the church. Those who get it know what I'm talking about. Those who don't get it I've probably already turned this radio program off. So there is a negative attitude. Their minds are completely made up, and they're anytime this subject comes up, they are just going to turn the other way. Anyways, let's finish up this little bit of an article here, because there's some names that would be good for us to remember. Not that we'll remember all these names that much. Some of them have died already, but they should be taken for somewhat of saintly, heroic people in the church today. So, anyways, under Pope Francis, the institute had new statutes, and one of the things in the new statutes was the suspension of 5 master degree programs. 5 master degree programs that say, okay, we're not going to do this one, and we're not going to do this one, and we're not going to do this one. And one of the ones that they had was for priestly formation. In other words, how to teach priests how to talk about Humanae Vitae. So we're not going to do that anymore. They dismissed that Professor Greigel and 2 other leading professors. They denied him tenure. Wait a minute. I'm reading this a little bit wrong. They were already tenured, and they let them go already. That's something you just don't do in academic settings, right? That was Monsignor Livio Molina. He was the former president of the Institute, whose chair of fundamental moral theology, a position first held by Cardinal Cafara, was abolished. So not only did they deny him he had tenure, they took it away from him, and they took away the chair that was held by the founder, Cardinal Cafara. And they also got rid of Father Jose Noriega, a moral theologian who was removed on grounds that being a superior general of a religious congregation, the Disciples of the Hearts of Jesus and Mary, was incompatible with being a tenured professor in the new institute. Why they would have come up with that is a little unsure of if that were, if they were going to stick with that kind of attitude about positions. Did you know that there was a vow that Jesuits used to take about not being a pope? There's very few popes that were Jesuits, but Jesuits were never supposed to accept the position of being pope. They were always defenders of the pope, and they had taken a position to not be pope. So since they got rid of Father Noriega because he was the head of a religious congregation, what that does put a little bit of a crimp into the
Wrinkled my brain, man.
But none of these professors were notified in advance of the decision, nor were they given recourse to challenge their dismissals, leading to a number of protests, including by its own students and alumni, and more than 200 international scholars who signed an open letter asking Bishop Paglia to reinstate these people that were just fired, but didn't work. Six other professors were also let go in the second wave that followed days later, and a number of other respected professors have since also been dismissed in the third wave or left on their own accord, including Father Jose Granados, a former vice president of the Institute and a member of Father Noriega's congregation. I think that's interesting that two of those are Hispanic names, because in the Latin American world, obviously, there is a greater openness to life. Artificial birth control hasn't been as widely accepted in the Latin American community. And so having some good named, obviously Spanish-speaking, priests, theologians from the Latin American world to help ground and teach the beauty of the Catholic teachings on Humanae Vitae would be a very important and a beautiful sign of God's grace. But this is what being thwarted today. As a matter of fact, I think that's, we could sort of say that's kind of what was behind when Pope Francis flippantly said a lot of Catholics breed like rabbits, that certainly offended a lot of moms and dads of big families. And he said that, maybe a lot of people say that at different times, but it's really an insult, and it really should not have come from the Pope, who could believe, he could easily say something more like, friends, if you're having difficulty feeding your family, practice natural family planning. If you're not able psychologically to deal with more children, then please practice natural family planning. But he didn't say those kind of things, and that would have been a much better sign of God's grace, I'm afraid. Anyways, a little bit of a small news event, but I hope it draws you in to want to study more, to understand better. Lawyer, of course, does such a beautiful job with this theology of the body, and this, of course, is related to that front and center. Anyways, God bless you for listening. I am Father Tom Coyes. You are listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
When the world makes no sense, do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. Thank you. become so obscure, it does not take that.